Welcome to the So You Wanna Be a Data Scientist podcast. Here we interview awesome data scientists and other data professionals. This show is part of the website soyouwannabeadatascientist.com. After listening, take my free data science Kickstarter course to learn what it takes to become a data scientist. In the meantime, enjoy the episode. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of So You Wanna Be a Data Scientist podcast. Today with me, I have Jayita Putatunda. She's a senior data scientist at Intellient and joins us from New York. Welcome, Jayita.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me, Mishra. It's like I'm really excited to do this today with you and maybe answer some of the questions that you have and then just see how it goes. I'm really excited.
Awesome. That's great to hear. Okay, so without further ado, let's start with our questions. First of all, I want to learn more about your company. What does Intellient do?
Yeah, so Intellient, we are like a customer-driven professional services company. We kind of specialize in all kinds of tailor-made software and tech solutions. So to give you a little bit of depth, we have like four major domains. We are into data and analytics and AI, which is the domain that I work in. We basically work with a lot of data, make decisions, work with NLP and a lot of ML algorithms, and then kind of do a lot of data engineering into the whole data science services for a lot of clients for their business growth. We also have a cloud application development domain. We do custom applications, legacy app migration, cloud enablement, and try to do all the scaling work for a lot of our works. We are also into DevOps and then document automation processes, which is our sister company called Blue Relay. So yeah, that's like an overview of us. We kind of deliver all kinds of IT solutions for different domains of clients and help them grow their business in the best way they can.
Nice. It sounds like you have a wide range of offerings. That sounds very cool. And can we call this a consultancy sort of work?
Yeah, you can say it's like more of a professional services work. Some of our team is also based out of Canada, Toronto. We also have an office in Oakville. So we kind of work like as a global team out there in Canada and here, and then try and do our services as well as like from a variety of clients. Some are based out of Canada, some are based out of US. So it's like a mix of both worlds.
I see. Okay. That sounds great. And before we go more into the details of what you do at the company, I want to learn a bit about you. So can you tell us a bit about how you ended up where you are or what your journey has been so far?
Yeah, definitely. It's definitely been a roller coaster, but a very exciting journey. So yeah, I grew up in India in a very middle-class family. And I guess while growing up, my major focus was to just get a job and be financially independent. And the typical route that people usually take back in India is like to pursue engineering and then you're going to start 4 years of BTech journey. But then I really wanted to do something more focused. So I did a Bachelor of Science, majoring in economics and a minor in statistics. I guess my love for statistics started from there. I went on to complete my MBA and started my first job with Deloitte India. So that exposure that I got in Deloitte India like was a combination of client exposure and working hands-on. I guess that's what fueled a lot of my curiosity in diving deep in this field. And so I moved to NYC. I started my MS degree at Baruch College, which is like City University of New York, and I did my specialization in quantitative methods and modeling. It had like a great combination of statistics and decision sciences course, and that's where I like got a lot of exposure to deep statistical analysis, hands-on Python coding, and also a little bit of exposure to R. So that's where it started. It was definitely a tough couple of years learning a whole new paradigm of science, mastering the kind of coding and working full-time as a data science intern as well. But then once I graduated, I started my first job here in New York City with a media consulting company called Omnicom, Omnicom Media Group. But that was like just the beginning. Since then, I have like worked extensively in this space in the domain of data science and kind of making my focus around natural language processing and ML algorithms.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's a very long journey.
Yeah, and a journey that led you to this time today that I'm having with you and answering all your questions.
Everything you did so far brought you to this day.
Yeah, and I'm so excited for that.
Nice. So you mentioned that you came first from the statistics area and then economics, you said, and then you did a master's degree. And apart from that, did you have to do any other qualifications, like, you know, online courses, online degrees or boot camps? Did you take part in any of those online resources?
So there are definitely a lot of available resources out there. Like, I started with an MS degree, but alongside I had to do a lot of hands-on courses and a little bit of code building exercises using various Kaggle datasets, if you know, and some of the industry leader courses in, I guess, in EDX and Coursera that Andrew Ng has, like, phenomenally informative. Like, even if you were doing a master's degree, it's very important to kind of follow along the new areas and domains that these people explore. Like, there's a podcast by Thomas Wolf, who's like kind of the leading head of Hugging Face. So understanding some of the ongoing technology is very important, like stay on top of it, and then seeing that how you can kind of, you know, take baby steps and get into that, trying and applying that in your everyday work. So yeah, those are very helpful. I did not go into any boot camp, but then doing a little bit of courses and from EDX and Coursera, and also like utilizing the Kaggle datasets and the Kaggle kernels that's available is also a very good practice to like keep it at top of it.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Also, I think what you said here is also very important. It's not just that before you became a data scientist, you do all the courses and get all the education and all of a sudden you know everything, but it is something that you need to keep learning. And if there is a new course out there about a topic, you should just go ahead and do it, right? So yeah, I feel like sometimes people get the idea that they should already know everything before they start applying to jobs, but that's not the case in the example that you give also.
Yeah, definitely. I feel that sometimes, like, when we see a job description out there and we feel like, oh my God, I don't even fulfill like 50% of the requirements, but don't be like, that's the kind of feeling that, or that's the kind of coaching I've had, that don't be deterred by that. If you have like a 50% knowledge in that, you're already ahead of the curve. So go for it, understand what is like the gap that's the job that you're targeting has, and then kind of keep mapping it on the go. You do not have to know everything at the start. Like, no one knows everything at the start about everything. It's constantly evolving. And yeah, data science is such an evolving space right now.
Yeah, definitely. And before we go into the specifics of what you do at your work, you already mentioned why you chose data science, but is there any other specific reason that made you choose data science or made you specialize in this area?
Yeah, so I guess I was always interested in data. Like, once when I started my bachelor's degree, we did some projects involving a lot of data that was available from Indian government websites. But then the major, I would say the pivot point came when I was working in Deloitte. I had a lot of, you know, inference work where we were given, like, you know, what the metrics is are happening. It was already calculated and we were supposed to be, you know, making sense of it, like communicating it back to the clients and then working on solutions on how to increase those KPIs and metrics. But I guess that's when I kind of felt that, what if I know on how these metrics are generated, what's the logic behind it, what's the math behind it, and how are we even getting to the point saying that, okay, this matrix makes sense for this kind of problem that you're trying to solve. So that journey from understanding what to do with the data to infer, and then how to actually do the logic is like kind of where I felt that I had a gap and I wanted to learn more about it. And that's when I kind of pivoted and like felt that, okay, let me do a MS degree and get more hands-on into the space. And that's how it all started.
Nice. So it kind of evolved in time also. The more you learned, the more you wanted to get into it.
Yeah, I guess the more I saw that what it could do, I felt that, oh, I could do this too and I want to do this. And that's how I guess that came across.
Yeah, sounds like a great way of starting. So let's talk a bit about your day-to-day work. I know it's not always possible to share the exact projects that you're doing at your company, but I'm always curious to hear what kind of projects are being done across different industries, across different domains. So can you give us a couple of examples of projects that you've done?
Yeah, sure. So, yeah, on a high level, let's talk about some of the general ideas of the projects. Like, say, one project that I gave a lot of time was like, how to understand unstructured data. I guess that's where I pivoted a little bit into NLP or natural language processing domain as well. So everywhere we have so much data sources, like there's Reddit, there's Twitter, there's like Facebook, Google, all the news blogs that out there. How can we leverage these kinds of data to kind of understand or answer any particular business questions? So I guess the initial projects that I was doing was are in and around classification methods. So how can we take all these data, understand what people are talking about, what's the major clusters, or what the major topics that's governing the current conversation that's happening out there in the market for a particular, say a particular client wants to understand, okay, what's happening in New Zealand, and what people are talking about sweet dishes, like do they want candy, or do they want, what kinds of desserts do they love, and what are the kinds of interactions happening? So you can do and get a lot of insights doing social media tracking. There's some great tools out there that kind of capture that, what are the big domains or bigger ideas, and then you can kind of create your strategy around those insights and findings, and then clients can use that as like their baseline for maybe new product development, new feature development, or how do they get more people to like some of the products that they have built. So yeah, it's been great in terms of understanding the market and the business. So it got a lot of exposure to business requirements as well, because sometimes it's very important that you not only understand data, but you understand the underlying business need for that data. Because if you cannot, like, very in a simple way, like make sense of the analysis that you did in business terms, then there is no value to any of the work that we do, basically. Because the leadership team, the marketing team, the sales team, everybody's involved in a data science project, and the end goal should be how to increase the bottom line, or I would say make profit, or make or create value for your customers. So that's like the end goal should be. One of the other projects that I worked on was also a lot of included a lot of natural language text. So basically, say if you have so much data that gets generated from a lot of companies, like say banking and client sectors, how do you do fraud analytics on that? Like, how do you understand what's an outlier, and not only based on the current data that you have, but what kind of data can you map it on top of it? Like, can you understand what are the macro factors that's going on right now? What's the GDP that's like, what's the economy doing right now? How it's performing, and then how can you create like an insights based on that, and suggest multiple sectors of solutions and strategies for the product teams, and saying that, okay, hey, if you do something like this, maybe the customers will feel more involved and would like to like get into that product, or maybe ask for your suggestions, or create more value for them. So yeah, it's in a high level, those, like, these are some of the major areas that I have worked on.
Nice. Also, they're very different projects too. And I also agree with your point about how much domain knowledge a data scientist should have. Maybe not beforehand, before starting the project, but I feel like, as you said, knowing about the domain, knowing about the area that you're going to work on, really helps you interpret also the results that you get, but also to maybe change your solution a little bit to make sure that it fits the domain or the area that you're working on. It definitely isn't a one size fits all sort of work, data science.
I guess it also develops over time. You do not have to know the domain space very well at the start of it. Once you jump into it, make sure you're aware of like what's happening in that space, or what's the best practices in that space. So that kind of gives you an edge while you're presenting your work.
So I understand that most of the time the answer to to my next question from a consultancy sort of work is it depends, but I still ask it because I'm very curious. What kind of deliverables do you hand in at the end of your project? So what do you typically deliver?
I will start with the cliches answer. It definitely depends, but then I guess as a overall general would be like to start with, it's definitely the product, or if we are building like say a model for a particular problem that we're trying to solve, then it would be like a full model that works, all the additional ads that people need to do to maintain the model, what, how to get more data and keep the retraining process on. So that's like some of the subdomains of that whole model that gets delivered. Also, we do a lot of presentations and demos with the client team. We walk them through solutions. Our team like kind of handles the demo and then makes sure that there's like an iterative concept of we track what things needs to change. Do we need to, you know, make some updates quickly, or it's just like a long-term fix? So based on that, that whole process is kind of like a maintained by our internal team as well. And then also for some of the projects that I have done in data science, we also do, you know, internal white papers alongside the client team, so that, you know, anytime a project that gets deployed in one particular, say a one particular team accepts the project and then, you know, kind of deploys it internally, they also want to make sure that the other teams, if it brings value to them, they also adopt it. So then these kinds of white paper and technical writings really helps the team that then going to work for their merging to make sense of what actually we did and then how they can leverage it. So yeah, I guess the model, the technical white papers, the overall documentation, and then also the demo and how to do testing.
Yeah. Sounds great. And you mentioned teams in your answer. So I want to ask you, are you part of a bigger team? Do you work together with other people, or do you work more individually in your projects?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I guess the initial part of the data science projects, like sometimes you may be an individual contributor, but there's always a bigger team that you kind of intertwine your work with. That's the DevOps teams comes into play. The ML engineers, they kind of help make sure that all the when we do the deploy, the scalability, everything is taken care of. Then we also in an everyday work work with the marketing team and the product teams, because they are kind of like the ones that's kind of building up the requirements. We do this everyday catch up so that we understand that we are in line with their expectations and the product features that they wanted are like kind of exactly getting delivered. So yeah, I'm definitely a part of a bigger data science group and a bigger tech group, but then the work level at an individual level, it can be an individual contributor level, but then you work with different teams at once to make sure that the progress is what was expected at the first place.
I see. And how do projects happen for this team? Is there like, do the clients approach you, or does your company approach the clients?
I think it works both ways. We do have a lot of recurring clients that we have been working with for a long time now. We do multiple different kinds of projects with them. And also because of so many new activities that IntelliInt has done, we participate in tech fests. We participate in a lot of social work as well. So then we definitely, like our, some of our team members go for panel talks at various keynote speakers in various conferences, so you kind of have exposure from those angles as well. And we have had clients approach us from all these different segments and as well, but then I guess it's a good mix of both areas.
Mm-hmm. And I'm curious about the teamwork that you have. So how much of your work would you say is people facing? Because I'm sure you have to, you know, join meetings with people to discuss with the other parts of the team or other parts of the organization, and maybe also with the client to understand how the project should go. But how much of your time would you say that you spend in people facing tasks?
Yeah, I guess it also depends on the nature of the project. Like some of the previous projects that I was working on was very client intensive. So the client was very actively engaged. We were like communicating through, like, you know, bi-weekly sprints. We had scrums and like, you know, kind of stand-up meetings where you give updates, and if there's any change to the requirements, we were like let known. So And then it depends on some of the other projects that sometimes it happens that you have like a task, the internal team is working on it, and then we work until the demo is ready for the first viewing of the client. So sometimes it depends on how much the client wants to be, you know, actively engaged in everyday work. But I guess for most of my day, I do attend the updates and the daily scrums, and then I also focus a lot of time on like, making sure that all the requirements from my end is getting updated. And if I get stuck, we have like a amazing team of data scientists and ML engineers who are always there to help. So yeah, sometimes it happens that we kind of tag team and solve a challenge that maybe is like a little bit unfamiliar to me, and then it happens both ways.
Nice. Yeah, that's great to be working with people who can support you and who you can learn from, right?
Yeah, definitely. Like, we have such a helpful team around. Like, whenever you're stuck, yeah, just put a notice in Slack and somebody will raise their hand and, like, help in any way they can.
Yeah, great. And you already mentioned a little bit about, you know, how your day goes, but can you tell us a bit more in detail of, like, what does a normal weekday look like for you? You know, how much time do you spend on admin tasks? How much time do you spend on actually hands-on coding, or, you know, in meetings, or like, yeah, just what do you do every day?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I would say a typical day would definitely start with like a, you know, quick call with the project team, understanding if we have all the requirements. Though sometimes we like do keep doing it over Slack and not necessarily at everyday stand-up calls, then there's like an actual good portion of work that you keep doing on your own, understanding the data, cleaning it up, and then obviously like doing hands-on coding to make it actually make sense out of it. Then there's also I guess I have seen this culture in IntelliJ, which is like a really it's a feel good for me, because they really want you to keep learning. So we have been given like that every week you can spend some 20% of time to kind of learn new things. So they encourage you to go take certifications if you want to maybe finish a pet project that you feel is good and you're interested in. So I do spend some of the time in that as well. I'm really interested in knowing or like deep diving in the NLP domain research section. So if there's like a new paper, I do spend some time understanding what they're talking about, what are the kinds of applications that's happening, and if there's a way for us to leverage that. Like a quick example would be GPT-3. I know there was like so much discussion around that when OpenAI kind of released GPT-3. They had their API that they were giving out to only a few people. I really tried my best to get my hands on to see that if we can leverage that to do like a proof of concept, but yeah, I didn't get it through. But then still, it's very interesting to see that what that thing can do, what's the kind of underlying technology in it. And so I guess that's a good mix of like doing your hands-on work and also making sure that you are aware of what's happening. So that continuous learning is something that IntelliJ really pushes you to do, which I feel is a great thing.
Yeah, it's very exciting though, right? There are people in the world who are developing these very interesting frameworks and libraries that you can use, and you just sometimes don't even know all the possibilities and like how you can apply it. So you just sometimes just need to get your hands dirty and try it a little bit and have that curiosity in your head and just go ahead with it, and maybe something great will happen.
Yeah, like keep doing it until it makes sense to you. So yeah. I guess that's like the kind of thing. Yeah,
definitely. So while you're doing all this work, what are the tools that you use the most often, you know, including programming languages or IDEs, for example?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the major chunk of it for programming would be Python. Like everybody works mostly in Python, at least in the data science and the ML side of our team. We also use SQL based on which domain or which cloud users we are doing. Like sometimes it's MySQL. We also work with IPM DB2, depending on the client requirements. Then there's also, I guess, the overall idea of using cloud space. So a lot of our projects is also deployed in AWS cloud, a lot in IBM cloud, again depending on client requirements. So yeah, these are some of the top, I would say, the tool set or tool stack. And then there is definitely more in the front end and the backend that the backend and frontend engineers do, which I may or may not say correctly, but I know definitely that they work with React, Node.js, and all kinds of tools that's available out there. But yeah, I have very limited knowledge in the frontend side. I guess one of my goals for 2021 was to be like at least learn the basic of React so that like, you know, I can do a little bit of POC and create some project as like a pet project so that there is like a beautiful UI that people can see.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, sometimes data science projects are like, oh, you have a bunch of data and then charts. Okay, what do I do with it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good idea, though. I think it will be very fun. Yeah. Why not just create a nice React interface and then... People also, I feel like, especially clients who don't know much about data science would be very impressed by you being able to show your results in a very nice and cute way on a website, on a web app.
Yeah, I guess for the team side, we definitely do have the UI or the front-end engineers who kind of help us put that together. But yeah, more from my, you know, making sure that my pet projects don't look dull, I guess that's a good way to start to do with it.
Definitely, definitely. Okay, so let's talk a bit about how you feel about your job, especially about being a data scientist. Can you tell me, for you, what the most exciting thing is about being a data scientist?
Yeah, I guess the best part, I would say, is the uncertainty. Like, there's so many different problems and challenges that pop up that, like, sometimes I feel I didn't even knew that it existed or it needs to be solved. But those are actual real business use cases that needs to be solved. And the, you know, kind of innovation or out-of-the-box thinking that sometimes is needed to kind of handle those challenges is really exciting. It can get a little bit of daunting sometimes and be like, oh, am I doing it right? Is it the correct way? But I guess since you have like a good team around you and you know that, okay, you can like, you know, discuss your ideas and like, you know, pitch the best one and, or maybe do a POC for some of the areas. So this challenge is a little daunting, but very exciting for me. So I guess I thrive under pressure is what my family says, that you do everything at the last minute, though I am not doing everything at the last minute. I am trying to be more organized. But then, yeah, the excitement of knowing some of the challenges that I've never thought existed is something that's making me hooked into the space.
Nice. Great answer. And what about the most boring part of your job or the part that you like the least?
my manager may not appreciate this, but I really do not like filling out timesheet. Like, I know so many of my friends in other companies, they are also like, oh, timesheet is something that I think that we should automate and we just do not have to fill. We'll just speak to them. Okay, I have my computer, I did some work, you know how much work, how much time I spent on this app, just put the time in there automatically. I think that's something that should be developed. Oh, I do not like filling timesheets. But then I am trying to keep up with it and people are very nice. They keep reminding me, please fill your timesheets. And I'm like, okay, I'm on it. But yeah, I guess other than that, it's pretty much fun to go to work.
Yeah, you're probably not alone in as the person who doesn't like filling in timesheets. for our listeners who never heard about what a timesheet is, it's I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but it's basically where you keep track of all the work that you did and how long you worked on a certain project, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you have to put in time how you're spending your time over the week.
Well, yeah, that's definitely not a very enjoyable experience, I would say. Okay, so how about being a woman in this area, especially in tech and in data science? Have you encountered any bias since you started working or also in your education?
Yeah, that's a great question. I guess there's like a lot of good, like, you know, initiatives that's going on right now that people are talking about these issues and how to handle them. But I guess I would say that I have been really fortunate enough that I don't feel that I have faced a lot of bias in this field. Like in my previous company in Omnicom and Sparks Nani, the majority of the data science team was like women. Our VP was also a woman. A lot of my colleagues were also women. So yeah, that space has been really safe for me. And I guess but I do know that this is a real problem and there have been a lot of issues that people, you know, face different issues. But like, I would say that I've been really fortunate enough to have not experienced it personally, but then I do know the challenges out there, and so like whatever I can do from my side, I keep doing it. Associated with Women in Code, we did a free 6-week technical webinars and to understand and to help people, or especially women, like understand and get into data science domain with more exposure to technical as well as industry knowledge. But yeah, I guess I've been pretty fortunate in that space up until now.
That's great. But as you said, we should also just support and encourage each other, right? That's how we create a better environment for everyone.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, and with that, I have my last question. Do you have any advice for someone who wants to become a data scientist or someone who just wants to get into a data career?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a that's a tricky one. Like, there's so many things to learn. I understand that when you like, you know, maybe decide that okay, I want to jump into the field of data, don't restrict yourself to thinking that okay, I want to be a data scientist. Or there's like so much chances now, opportunities right now, like data analysts, data visualization specialists, that the field has grown exponentially, and I feel we just like everybody just needs to understand that everybody has a strong, you know, I would say a strong a strong interest that they can build up on. Like if you are really you know, visual and you are very artistic, like maybe go and like take a lot of visualization classes and see how you can master that field. So the hands-on practice is very much required. Like, you don't have to know everything, but if you once you have like did a little bit of digging, you know what, where your interest lies, just make sure that you do a lot of hands-on projects, you make like a good portfolio for yourself and jumpstart from there, so that you can communicate to everybody, hey look, I have this talent and I can like make wonderful graphics with any kinds of data and any kinds of analysis. So I guess that communication is also very important. Like, you need to make sure that everybody knows what you can do well, and that's how you get the like create a good platform for yourself and make yourself up to succeed.
Great advice. I totally approve this message, especially about the portfolio. I think it's definitely very important. I mean, I think people maybe sometimes get a little bit scared when they hear the word portfolio. So it doesn't have to be something very scary, you know, like we talked about. It doesn't actually have to be like a React web app. You know, you can just have your project, do a small project, put it on GitHub, make sure you have a nice README, just a couple of paragraphs and explain what you do. And that's just a portfolio.
Exactly. And also keep commenting your code. I guess that's very important. Sometimes even I miss it like in a normal everyday work. But then once you're creating a portfolio and you have good comments in your code and everybody can follow through it, I guess they'll appreciate the effort and appreciate the flow of it. And you'll see that how well it sometimes gets back to you. And you'll be like, okay, this person has really given effort to make sure that the audience understands the project.
I think even yourself in a year or so would really appreciate having some comments on the code.
I know, I definitely had those moments. And I'm like, why didn't I write what I was trying to do with this function? And then I was like, okay, let me put that up now that I know.
Yeah, it's definitely a very important practice. Awesome. And with that was all of my questions, Jayita. Thanks a lot for coming on the show. Thanks a lot for sparing your time and giving everyone who is listening to us great advice about how they can become data scientists too. And thanks for sharing your journey with us.
Thank you for having me. I was really excited. This is a really motivational for me as well. I'd be like, okay, now how can I be a better data scientist? But yeah, thank you. Thank you so much for having me. And it was very nice talking to you.
That's great to hear. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Hey, thank you for listening, and I hope you enjoyed this episode. Don't forget to take my free data science Kickstarter course to learn what it takes to become a data scientist. See you next time.